pity the fool. I said, I pity the fool. Well, I pity the fool, yeah. I said, I pity the fool.
Bobby Blue Bland. Bobby Bland, 83 years old, passed away, and we'll be honoring him with his music every day. He was born in 1930, Memphis, Tennessee, one of the great bluesmen of all time, and we transformed that genre in many ways. Passed away, and we're going to honor him with song all morning long here on the show. In every break, you'll hear a little Bobby Bland, and then I'll be playing him all day in my car as I drive around. To boot. We are joined here in studio by Adara Ayira, project manager of the More in the Middle initiative at Associated Black Charities, facilitator and analyst in the Baltimore Racial Justice Action, and a spoken word artist. Good to have you back in the studio, Adara.
Thank you for inviting me again.
And Diana Ladey, I have that right?
Yes, you do.
All right, good. Facilitator and trainer with the Baltimore Racial Justice Action, Adam Jackson, chief executive officer of Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle, Davon Love, Director of Research and Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Good to have you all here.
Thanks for having us.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join in this conversation about an interesting project these organizations have over the summer. But let me just start this way, just kind of bleed in from the, no pun intended, that was a terrible way to put it, coming in from the last session that we just did. Adara, you've made mention of that as you walk through the door.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at issues like race and this trial and what America is wrestling with, how that fits into the kind of stuff you think about and the work you're about to take on.
Absolutely. I was listening with interest at your guest, and I have to say I agree with everything that they said in terms of what this means, where we are in America in terms of racism and white supremacy and our willingness as a country to deal with those issues. It is disheartening to see an attempt at deracializing what is and was a very racial situation. And I think that the attempt to do that speaks to where we still are, unfortunately, as a country.
Well, one of the things that struck me in this conversation, thinking about the Trayvon Martin murder and the trial of George Zimmerman, and preparing for the Supreme Court decisions that might come down this week, around gay marriage, but especially around voting rights and affirmative action, is that, and with the election of Barack Obama as president of the United States of America, is that more and more, and you can hear it in what some of the justices said during the hearings, especially around voting rights, and affirmative action, was that rather than addressing the issues of racism in America and how that plays into the heart of what defines this country and culture, Black folks and black rights and black movements in the country are not being treated as just, quote-unquote, another interest group without seeing the depth behind what's going on. I mean, that to me is part of the struggle of the moment in terms of opening some conversation on understanding in America, because that's what struck me over the last few days a lot.
Well, I mean, I would say a part of the problem is that there isn't a sophisticated enough vocabulary by the public to interpret and to understand the mechanics and the ways in which racism and white supremacy operate. So one example is that if you look at a lot of research that talks about racial bias, I mean, racial bias in the United States has gone down tremendously, you know, since Jim Crow segregation. But one would think that if racial bias was decreasing, that must mean that racism is decreasing and not a major issue. But if we understand racism and white supremacy as the social, economic, political, cultural subordination of peoples of color, then we would have to say that, you know, that it hasn't subsided since Jim Crow segregation, but in some instances has actually increased. You know, if we look at mass incarceration, the war on drugs, even if we look at, you know, public education, I mean, all these different areas of life are defined by the notion of racism and white supremacy, but it will only make sense if there's a sophisticated enough vocabulary for people to understand the proper context.
Mark, another thing that happens is that when we talk about the issue of racism, what we talk about is people's intent. Did they intend to be racist? Did they intend to take this action? We do not talk about impact. And the law, as it relates to race, also relates to people's intent instead of the impact.
Diane, let me bring you in. Welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Well, related to what Davon was saying, I have a quote here from Harlan Dalton from 1995 that says...
And who's Harlan Dalton, by the way, for those of us who don't know?
civil rights activist. By doing our homework, we can transform a pretend conversation that seeks to simplify the impact of race in America into a full-scale dialogue that reveals the utter complexity, variability, and adaptability of racism. And I think, you know, that's why we're having these training courses, is because racism does mutate over time. It's white supremacy is a very clever system that has a very good mechanism for maintaining itself and adapting to changes. And one of the things that it does is continually try to, you know, minimize race to, you know, the whole colorblind society. We have a black president now and everything's, you know, great. And really it's just a way of mutating so that kind of has gone underground.
Folks, I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts and ideas. And I want to jump into what you raised here, Diane, because it's one of the reasons we're here today. But did you have a thought, Adam, before we jump into this?
Yeah, one of the things I was going to add to the conversation, because I think sometimes people make the conversation of racism and white supremacy high academic theory. When in actuality, you really can't understand politics in this country, especially in a city like Baltimore, without understanding racism and white supremacy. Just to give a concrete example, between 1999 and 2007, when Governor Martin O'Malley was mayor of Baltimore, he illegally arrested 750,000 black people in Baltimore City. And the thing is, people think that's just, you know, kind of a random act.
What was that number you just used?
750,000 people.
And what do you mean by illegally arrested? Just probing and pushing that, man. What do you mean by that?
Well, just in terms of, to give some background, because when he was mayor of Baltimore, one of the things he was really hard on was crime, trying to decrease crime in Baltimore.
Right.
And so his method of doing that was similar to what Rudy Giuliani did in New York City, was to just arrest large swaths of people, mostly black people. And I think with Delegate Joe B. Carter, sued the state, along with the ACLU and the NAACP, and won because they proved that he was illegally arresting black people in Baltimore City. But my thing is, the point is that that's an example of racism manifesting itself in our governmental politics, and people sometimes don't see those manifestations clearly because we make it academic theory, and I think sometimes it'll do us good to kind of make the real connections to the material manifestations of racism in society.
So I have a lot of questions and thoughts here, but let me just jump in first into this program you're doing this summer. I'll come back to this because I think we are dedicating this show over for its length of time we have on air, whether it's 6 months, a year, or 10 years from now, to this issue. It's one of the issues we've been wrestling with for 20 years on the air. So I'm curious, Adara, who should I turn to first here? Adara, whoever wants to explain, who should be explaining what this project is for the summer? So that's part of what I'd like to get out of here today.
Well, there are actually two different programs.
So
three different programs that I believe are all interconnected.
Are separate programs.
Yes, they are.
Okay,
let me just share this because I'm so proud of this. So I do want to and share it, and I'm glad that you caught me first. I have ties to three different organizations that are working on this issue. One is Baltimore Racial Justice Action, and the ongoing trainings that this organization has been doing for over 10 years. We started out with a group called Agents of Change, and we've been doing that work for about 20 years. And then it morphed into Baltimore Racial Justice Action because the white people in the organization understood that there was a disparity in terms of the risk being taken in this work. And they understood that they needed to step up, to assume some risk, to do some teaching, because it should not be people of color teaching white people about racism, white supremacy. And that was how Baltimore Racial Justice Action was born. So we were in this space doing this type of training when no one else wanted to be doing this work, because it's hard work. I am so proud of the leaders of A Beautiful Struggle, of Davon Love and Adam Jackson, who I have had the opportunity and the privilege to work with as interns of Associated Black Charities. And Associated Black Charities has also joined with Baltimore Community Foundation to reach kind of the grass tops. A lot of the work that we do is with the grassroots. So
what does that mean? Because I've heard you use that before, grassroots.
It means that in addition to reaching out to those most impacted by the negative aspects of racism, white supremacy, those people in communities of color who deal with these issues all the time, and white people in communities who are really interested in addressing these issues, the initiative by Associated Black Charities and Baltimore Community Foundation, we're engaging civic leaders. And some of those leaders are the same audience that Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle's summer session will reach out to. These are people with influence. These are people who really want to better understand the complexities, as Davon and Adam have shared, of the issue of racism and its manifestations in the culture, as it affects jobs, as it affects just how we view each other. And a large part of all of this is how we view each other, because we have like these aversive, these hidden biases and prejudices supported and nurtured by our culture, by our media, by every aspect of day-to-day life, even in determining, as your previous guest said, who is looked at as being a victim and who is looked at automatically as being a criminal. And part of what all of our trainings try to do is surface these things and then flip the script so that we can better understand the complexities of what is happening.
So talk about what you're doing this summer.
I'm facilitating kind of a 6-week seminar session. So I wouldn't call it a training, more like an exploration of the ways in which white supremacy and the phenomenon of racism affect activism work dealing particularly with people of color. One of the things that I've been finding as I've been, you know, having conversations around the city, just about the notion of the importance of black people determining and being in control of the institutions that primarily serve us. And so I guess a part of the hope of the sessions that we're doing is to try to develop lines of communication with white folks that are really interested in being allies in the anti-racist struggle, providing lines of dialogue that can help us better navigate what a collective struggle against racism would look like. Because I think sometimes collective struggle against racism is framed in such a way that undermines the autonomy of black folks. And so it's important for us to figure out what that looks like in a way that's mutually beneficial and respects the political agency of all those who are involved.
There's a couple of questions here that I'm curious about that we explored a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to be exploring in the coming weeks with a number of guests. And I hope, by the way, that some of you will come back to be part of that dialogue. We hoped you would last week. You guys were busy last week when we started it, but we know you're going to come back to the rest, and Adar and everyone else as well. Mm-hmm. One of the issues that was raised in some of those shows is, can you really – this is a larger question, not about specifically about your workshop, which I'll come right back to. Can you – some people would question whether you can really address the issues of racism and white supremacy in America or in our own backyard here, without addressing issues of class, without addressing issues of just the capitalist system that we live in today. That was raised in the show, and that's something we're going to probe in real depth in the coming weeks, that very question. Mm-hmm. And Davon, look like you're ready to jump in the microphone.
it's a conversation I'm used to having, because that's usually the response when, you know, when we talk about society being organized on the principle of white supremacy, you know. And I mean, one thing that I would say is that, and like you said, I mean, it's a much longer, deeper conversation.
But
I mean, what I would say is that one of the things that I think people misunderstand is the notion of culture. And I think sometimes we reduce culture to like song, dance, cuisine. Culture is a large paradigmatic framework. It is the way in which people come to understand and know and interpret the world. And so I think it's important for us to recognize that the very frames of reference that we use to make the world intelligible, whether it's our notions of gender, whether it's the way that class and economics is distributed, having access to capital, all those things are structured by Western European culture that emanates from the American neoliberal machine. And so it's important, I think, and the reason why that's important is because when we don't put the notion of racism and white supremacy at the center of our analysis as to how all those different social dynamics operate, that what happens is that the question of institution building for black people gets framed out of the conversation. And that's sometimes what happens is that the effect of introducing to the conversation the notion of class being the primary determinant of injustice sometimes has the effect then of framing out the importance of black folks or peoples of color institution building for their own particularized interest, and therefore allows then, you know, white folks on the left to be able to determine what the movement for racial justice looks like in a way that undermines the political agency of people of color. And so regardless of how it comes down in our academic conversations about which one is the primary organizer, the effect that it can have is undermining that.
And that's why we're not going to get into all this today, because there was too much to talk about in terms of your programs, but I think that it's beyond the academic conversation people are trying to have on this program. Go ahead.
Just one thing, and I'm going to do what I hardly ever do in life, and that is give a short answer. Class. Those who know me know how true this is. Class operates within the context of race, period.
Right, and also the intermingling of the two in a country like ours, where maybe it was this system we have ourselves that created the notion of race to start with, the system we're living in now 500 years ago, and it is embedded in our culture so deeply. To change the system is not going to root it out. It's got to be rooted out in all kinds of other. But that's a very complex question to have. And harking back to the days on the border of Mississippi and Alabama when there was a woodcutters union where half the workers were white and half the workers were black, and they were able to kill the union over racism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then they organized the wives who made the movement happen, which, long story. Mm-hmm. I'll just leave it at that for the moment. But so talk about these. What are you going to do in these workshops? How do folks get involved? What are you all going to do? What about the racial justice workshop? Then we'll go to LBS's.
Well, Baltimore Racial Justice Action is actually holding two workshop series this summer, one facilitated by our members of color for people of color, and I'll let Adar talk about the content of that one. The other one is a series facilitated by white people for white people. We have a very painful history. I don't know whether people feel guilty about it anymore. My generation used to, but
we as Americans,
we as in white people.
Okay.
Very, very painful history. And we try, and again, I'm speaking as a white person on behalf of a lot of white people I know. And, we want to avoid it. We don't want to have that conversation. You know, it raises a lot of questions about, you know, our character and what kind of people we are. And so you were talking about the whole class issue. You know, one of the things is that we use, you know, to avoid, conversing about race is to talk about, you know, to make it into class or to make it, you know, anything but race. And so what we do in our workshop is one, we want people working with facts. Opinion. Everybody has their opinions about race, and they're not getting us anywhere. So the first thing we want to do is, you know, teach people the history, because it has not been taught. Even to this day, it's not being taught, you know, in our schools, you know, what the actual history is. And that's not to make people feel guilty or make them feel bad. It's actually liberating to know the facts so that then you can operate in a new way in the world, you know, by seeing, you know, how you are contributing to perpetuating a system that you didn't have anything to do with building. And that's really the focus of our training for white people.
Adar, then we'll go over the other side.
And for people of color, the training, and for both trainings, actually, it will take place on July 12th, the evening of July 12th, the bulk of the day on July 13th, and then again the evening of July 26th, and the bulk of the day on July 27th. We recognize that different people have different work to do. And a lot of the work with people of color is developing this common language and really having this historical understanding that Devon and Adam continue to talk about in their trainings. It is also being able to arm ourselves to better deal with the system in which we live. to be able to thrive and to be able to survive and be able to do that and move forward more confidently in ourselves, more confidently in our understanding of history, so that our reactions to experience won't be so much emotionally based or emotionally charged, but really coming to the situation with an analytic framework, which can only help. And it's also sharing a network with people so that if you have questions about race or any of the interconnections and intersections, then you have a network to come to learn from. It is a network of accountability and of growth.
Now, let's go ahead, Devon and Adam, to describe what's happening with LBS at some of those classes you're teaching.
Yeah, so I mean, like I said earlier, these are sessions that are being held actually at 2640 St. Paul, a church space. And, you know, it's $25 per person per session that helps us support our organization. And basically, the next session that we're doing, this is coming Wednesday, actually, at 6 p.m. We're going to talk about the nonprofit industrial complex in Baltimore. So to start talking about specific ways in which the system of white supremacy actually implicates the work that people do, particularly those who see themselves as struggling for the cause of anti-racism, to kind of point out the ways in which people use the mantra of struggling to help improve the quality of life of those who are suffering as a result of racism and white supremacy can oftentimes be used to perpetuate the power of white folks in the society. I mean, Adam, I can actually talk a little bit about an event we're doing Friday.
Yeah, there's actually an event on Friday we're doing specifically centered around the nonprofit industrial complex. And it's not like the sessions. It's more of a debate that mm-hmm. we're having with other folks from the nonprofit community.
Who's going to be there?
Well, right now I think Zeke Bernhoff Cohen from the Bernhoff intersection.
Cohen, yeah.
He's agreed to come and attend, but there's other folks who said they're interested in like debating and being a part of the discussion too. But that'll happen the day of when we figure out, you know, who's going to be talking.
Right.
But yeah, that's this Friday actually at 6 p.m. at 2640 St. Uh-huh. Paul. And this event's actually pretty good for us because we're doing it as a fundraiser for the Morgan State University debate team,
which is another show we have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, Mark, that for all of the work that we do, a bottom line of it is to equip people to be able to use this racial equity lens and to practically apply it mm-hmm. in everyday life. Because if you do not understand the dynamics of racism, white supremacy, you really don't understand anything. And the other point, I want to make two other points, is that the work that Associated Black Charities is doing is really about expanding the lens. If we can expand the lens, the racial equity lens of influencers, of those people who hire, who are in a position of hiring, of the people who implement the criminal justice or injustice system, depending on what side you stand on. If we can expand the lens, create a common language and a common analysis, then that is the way that we address and eliminate structural and institutional racism. Because our conversation is not about interpersonal racism. It's not about individual racism. Anybody can, if that's your choice, fine, do it. But the problem occurs when the systems and the structures support that racial bias and that racial prejudice. So the conversation about structural and institutional racism is a conversation for everybody. It's not just a conversation for Black people or for Latino people or for Asian American people. It is a conversation first and foremost for white people who actually need to understand, because they breathe and move through this without understanding its impact on them and on the country and on us. So a lot of times what the conversation becomes is the deficits of people, like is happening in the Trayvon Martin trial. He is on trial. We're saying stop talking about the deficits of people unless you are willing to say that a whole group of people are inferior or have a criminal bent or cannot learn. Unless you are willing to say that out loud, then what we are really talking about and what we really have to give our attention to is talking about the systemic and institutional deficits which benefit groups of people to the detriment of others. And that is a conversation that we all can have.
So how do folks get in touch and involved in the few minutes we have left here? I want to make sure that people know how to
Well, the best way to get in contact with LBS, we have a website, www.lbsbaltimore.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter. They can look us up. Just type in our name, Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, at Smart Black Man, Davon at Davon Love. So you can always hit us up.
So and when do your and these classes start? When that you want to?
Well, we actually the first session started this past Thursday. The schedule's on our website, so the next one is this Wednesday at 6 p.m.
So anybody can attend.
Anybody can attend.
I mean, if you have a fee. We can't talk money on public radio, but you have a fee as well to go with that.
Right.
Just want to make sure they run so they can get there. How about y'all's?
You can. We have a website too. www.bmoreantiracist, bemoreantiracist.org.
I like that title.
I know. We do, too.
That's very cool.
On the events page, there's a training section where it will tell you how to, about the training, give you more details about the training. You can also email us at bemoreantiracist@gmail.com. to get a registration form.
And you can find me on Twitter at A Adar. No, that's not true. At Adar Ayira, A-Y-I-R-A, Views. So at Adar Ayira Views. And the ABC website is www.abc-md.org.
And I know my able producers and interns have all the information down. That'll all be on our website at steinershow.org. So people can connect to these two organizations, the work they're going to do this summer, and invite all of them back with all of you over the coming months as we have these intense conversations about race in America. So stay with us. I want to say thank you all for coming in first.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And we will have a much larger, longer conversation, so it'll take at least an hour of our program coming up doing this stuff every time we do it. And good luck to the summer with this project. This is good. Good to have you all here.
Thank you, Mark.
We're going to take a very brief break and come back. It's the top of the hour, isn't it? We got lots coming up in the next hour. Come back with Edward Snowden and his fleeing Hong Kong on his way to we don't know where. And we'll talk about that and more. We come back. Don't go away.